Welcome to a special episode of Taking Responsibility for Torah. Usually I try to have fully prepared shiurim and fully researched, but today I found a source that was just so cool I felt the need to share it widely and immediately. It comes with a story. Most weeks on Sunday, I look through the parsha to try and find a question that interests me that I'll try to write about for my essay this week, and often when it comes to Parshas Nitzavim Vayelech, the pasuk that comes up is Lo Bashamayim Hi, and I'm interested in interpretations that don't take the approach of the Tanur Shalach Noyi story. So I look on Ala Torah, and this week I found an explanation of the Emet Liakov or the Emes Liakov, Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky's parish, which seemed fascinating. About even though that's not what Lo Bashamayim Hi is specifically. But he takes from the other story of Lo Bashamayim Hi, the famous rabbinic literature, where the halachos that are forgotten during the morning after Moshe, and he takes that to make a very radical claim about the nature of Sefer Dvarim. And I'll talk about that more probably in my essay this week. The claim about the uniqueness of Sefer Dvarim, he roots not in just the surface appearance of Sefer Dvarim being in first person, as opposed to third person, but in a Gemara in Brachos. The Gemara in Brachos, so I had to look at the Gemara in Brachos to try and understand him. And then it turned out I had some time with Deborah, so we learned that the Gemara together today, Tuesday. And here the Gemara is on the Mishnah in Brachos, Daf Chaf. The Mishnah says, Ba'al keri maharher libo, right, a man who has emitted semen should simply think about Kriyat Shema rather than reciting it out loud. You don't make the brachos before or after Kriyat Shema. But in terms of eating, you make a Berakas HaMazon afterwards. We don't make a bracha rishon of any Mevarech Lefaneha, presumably because Berakas HaMazon is D'oraisa and a bracha rishon of the bracha before eating is only D'rabanan. It seems to think, since you make the brachas before and after Kriyat Shema and the brachas before and after eating. It doesn't say the Rebbe disagrees about the question of whether a Balkari can say Kriyat Shema out loud. Deborah says that she read that this is a machlokas Bavli and Yerushalmi, which the Bavli, as we'll see, clearly believes. The Rebbe's position entails saying Kriyat Shema itself out loud. Okay, so the Gemara in Dachav Aleph quotes Rabbi Yehuda's position and says, "Lememra de kasav Rabbi Yehuda balkari mutar b'divrei Torah." Do you mean to tell me that Rabbi Yehuda thinks that a balkari is allowed to say divrei Torah out loud? That's the implication, right? That since the brachos are not divrei Torah, I don't think the implication is that you get to say Kriyat Shema out loud. The Amar of Yeshua ben Levi, but Yeshua ben Levi said, "Minayin lebalkari shasur b'divrei Torah." How do we know from a pasuk that a balkari is not allowed to say divrei Torah out loud? It says that you're supposed to inform, right? Tell these laws to your children and your grandchildren. And the next pasuk is the day which you stood before Hashem at Horev. So malahalon, just like at Kabbalah at Torah, when we received the Torah, balikari nasurin, so we weren't allowed to be balikari. That's why you have to, right? That's why you have to prepare for 3 days. Afkan balikari nasurin. So here too. In the context of saying divrei Torah generally, a balkari is not allowed to, right, when in the context of vodatam levanecha, certainly in the context of teaching Torah, but even teaching Torah to yourself, a balkari is aser divrei Torah. So that proves, right, on the assumption that Rabbi Yehuda holds like this drush of Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, that Rabbi Yehuda must also hold that a balkari is aser divrei Torah, and therefore he cannot be cholik on the Tanakhama here, and on the assumption that that's what he means. What's going on? So Gemara doesn't give the answer, oh, he's only talking about brachos. Instead, the Gemara says, V'chitem Rabbi Yehuda lo darish smuchim. Maybe you'll tell me that Rabbi Yehuda disagrees with Rabbi Yehuda ben Levi's drasha because he does not believe in this kind of drasha called smuchim, where we have, right, V'hodatam levanecha levnei vanecha, which is Talmud Torah, next to the pasuk of Yom Asher Amata levnei Hashem lokecha b'chorev. Maybe he just doesn't believe in that kind of juxtaposition, right? Difference here about whether there is a difference between that and what we normally call Hekesh. So Gemara says, no, that can't be, because Amar Rav Yosef said in a different context, Afilu mandalo dorish smuchim b'chol ha-Torah. Even somebody who believes that in the rest of Torah, this mode of interpretation via juxtaposition called smuchim is not effective. The Mishnah Torah Darish, but in Devarim, we are Darish smuchim. We think juxtapositions are significant and even halachically significant, even though we deny this in the rest of Torah. Why do we know this? Because Rabbi Yehuda. Lo darish smuchim chol Torah kula, uv Mishnah Torah darish, because Rabbi Yehuda is not darish smuchim chol Torah, and yet we know that in Devarim, Rabbi Yehuda is darish smuchim. Okay, that's, so Deborah said, but this can't be, because everyone knows that the halacha, that a balkari is aser b'divrei Torah without tzvila, is only Darabanan, it's a takana of Ezra. So how can the Gemara claim that the source is a drasha, and that the only way Rabbi Yehuda could disagree is by rejecting that drasha, when drashas are wholly irrelevant here? And I said that the pshat of the Gemara is so clear that it's deoraisa, that there must be somebody who says it's really deoraisa. So I started looking for a position that held that the position with which Rabbi Yehuda disagrees is really. Really holds that a balkari is asur d'oraisa, even though the Gemara, the next daf, we know from all over, says that it's a takana of Ezra. So I found a Rashba, I think, who suggests that the Maksha here thought that, but that was not quite good enough, because I don't have a person for it, right? And the person who asked the question is presumably rejected by everybody else. So that's really just a sort of cheap way out to say that you're right, that it seems like the person who asked this question thought this, but he was wrong. But then I found a Me'iri, and it's the Me'iri that I want to share with you. But before doing that Me'iri, we need to do some further background. The Rambam says in Hilchos Mamrim, Perek Bet Halach Aleph, Bezin Gadol Shadorshu Bachat Min Amidot. If a Bezin Gadol, presumably that means a Beitin Hagadol, a great Sanhedrin, that derived via one of the 13 Midot of Shatorin Drashid Ben, one of the exegetical principles, Gefi Ma, or which don't have to be 13 and don't have to be the ones Rabbi Shmuel said, but derived by some kind of formal process of legal exegesis. Kifi ma shenira b'nehem shadin kach. So they derive what it seems to them should be the law. The danu din, and they issued a practical ruling on that basis. I think that's what the danu din means. They issued a formal legal ruling stating that that's what the Torah means. V'yamad acharehem beitin acher, another beitin arises, v'nirelo tam acher listoroto, and they have a different reason that contradicts and undermines the reason offered by the first beitin. Hareza soter v'dan kefi mashanira be'inav. This beitin can destroy and issue its own rulings as appears true in its own eyes. Sh'ne'emar el ha'shofet asher yeh b'yamim ahem, because the pasuk says that you should go to the judge will be in those days. En chachayav lelechet el achar beitin shebidorecha. You only have to follow the Beit Din in your generation. So the way the Rambam learns this, it's you could learn Pshat in the Gemara by Yiftach and Shimshon Dor that every generation, relative to the people, its own generation has the same power, but not relative to people of prior generations. But the Rambam learns this to mean that there is no constraint from prior generations in the interpretation of Torah. Now, how radically does the Rambam mean that? You notice he says, Beit Din Gadol Shadorshu, initially, and then it says v'mar acharim beitin acher. So that's a machlokes achronim. The Chazon Ish most radically says that it really means that there is no notion of binding precedent at all when it comes to drushas, and a non beitin hagadol can override a beitin hagadol on these issues. And then the Chazon Ish says, right, I love to quote this. So why don't we overturn all of the halachas of Chazal, even if we treat the Chatimat HaGemara as a Beitin HaGadol, or anything prior? And the answer is that to think that you are great enough to overturn a drasha found in the Gemara makes you an Epicurus, and Epicurus can't be a member of a Beitin. Okay. The simpler solution to the problem raised by the Chazon Ish, which Rav Chanan Wasserman desperately wanted the Chazon Ish to say, but he wouldn't, is that it's only another Beitin HaGadol that can overturn the prior Beitin HaGadol. But as everybody notices immediately, the requirement that we know from the Mishnah in Idiot, that it has to be gadol mimenu b'chachma of minyan, that the second beitin has to be greater than the first beitin, that is certainly missing. Even if you think the second beitin has to be a beitin hagadol, it doesn't have to be a greater or even as great beitin hagadol, right? That's the the source drasha is that even Yiftach and Shimshon are as great as right as the greatest prophets of the past. Okay, so for example, Harbaz says the following: Mashma midivrei Rabbeinu afilu ein beitin hasheni gadol min harishon b'chachav v'minyan. Right, it implies from right from his words that even if the second beitin is not greater than the first in chachma v'minyan, however you would translate that. What about the Mishnah in Edios, which says ein beitin yicholim levatel divrei beitin chaviro ad shiyeh gadol minu b'chachma v'minyan? We can say that the Rambam thinks that only applies to takanos and gzeros. Right, but when it comes to deoraisas, then you can do it. Because we don't say that. Right, how could that? What would be left of that pasuk? Okay, right. That's and the Radbaz says that he thinks that's what the language of levatel means. Levatel means to undo an action and not to overrule a ruling. So the Rambam he thinks is pshat. That ein beitin yachol gadol yachol levatel beitin chaviro ela im ken gadol minyan b'chachma v'minyan. The Rambam is pshat that only refers to drabbanans and not to deoraisas. Okay, and I think that's obviously pshat in the Rambam. The Kesef Mishnah here, Yosef Karo, famously says, but if the Rambam's right, why did we find that Tanayim and Amorayim don't disagree with prior generations, even or especially about deoraisas? So he says that's a voluntary decision that we won't give people permission to act. Okay, that's the background of the Rambam, and I think that that's clearly pshat in the Rambam. But what the Rambam still seems to be saying is that in order that if a later Beitin disagrees with the early Beitin and says that the early Beitin was wrong in its interpretation of Torah, and it has a different interpretation of Torah that thinks it's superior, so the Rambam thinks you're not bound by precedent. But the much more radical notion of Rambam, and one which I have always been attracted to, is that the Rambam doesn't think you have to be wrong. What he thinks is that the Torah is supposed to mean different things in different generations. And the natural way in which Torah is supposed to be interpreted is that, let's say, every Beit HaGadol is supposed to interpret it in the way which appears right in its time without having to claim that the past Beit Din was incorrect. But I have never found a Rishon who stated this interpretation of Rambam explicitly. And that's what brings us to the Meiri here. The Meiri says that Tvila Zu Shatikin Ezra Leval Karyon. This Tvila that Ezra was Metakin, right? That Ezra established, made a new rule for men who had seminal emissions. Ra'u Habay Macharav Shalop Pashta Takanato Bechol Yisrael. Those who came after Ezra saw that this decree had not spread throughout Israel, the Shaloha Yarov Tzibur Yecholin LaMudba, and that most of the congregation could not stand up to it, meaning that too many people saw Keri too often, and there would not be enough Talmud Torah, and people couldn't deal without learning Torah. Right? That's really no one's going to take advantage of it and say, "Oh, look, I have an excuse for not learning Torah." Instead, it was going to lead to Vital Torah that was psychologically unbearable for the community. At least that's the way I'd like to learn it. And even though, right, we quote our Mishnah, since Ezra's Gzera, that you can't learn Torah after seeing Keri without Tvila, did not spread throughout Israel, and it wasn't sustainable, so the later Beit Din is entitled to be Mevatelet, right, and on the basis of that claim that it doesn't have full authority because it hasn't spread and it's not sustainable. Different conversation about whether those, you know, for which we've shown him those are a single criterion that needs to be understood in some, right, in some way, as a composite or one of the two options of has spread or is capable of spreading, as opposed to the Meiri's position, which is that these are two independent criteria. And even the Meiri says this is only a case where both of them happen. So what happens if you only have one criterion? What if it's spread, but it's not sustainable? What if it's sustainable, but it hasn't spread? We don't know what the Meiri says there. But be that it may, here the Meiri says both criteria were met and lefichach bitluha. But now he goes on and he says, yesh mefarshim hatam. Some people explain that the reason that the takana, again, requiring tvila for, right, requiring immersion for a balkari before studying Torah again was annulled, is not, as we suggested, because it did not spread, or at least that's not the formal reason. Rather, Shlo Nemar ein beitin yachol vatel ella b'meh shenitkan machmat geder. This rule that a later beitin can't overrule an earlier beitin unless it's greater only applies to things that were established as a fence. Avamashenitkan mimikraot, but things which were established on the basis of verses, v'heim ro'im lefarsham b'derech acheret, and they see it as appropriate to interpret these verses in a different way, Rishayim, they have permission, v'heim mefarshim, so those people understand the Gemara saying, minayin levalkeri sh'asur b'divrei Torah, how do we know that a balkeri is asur to learn Torah, kilomar, meaning, mehechan yatzal Ezra takanazu, from where in Torah did Ezra derive this prohibition that he established, the Aflopish Amru Ezra Tikin, even though they say Ezra established it, we have another Gemara famously in Sukkah, where the Gemara interprets the language of Hitkin, of Rav Yochanan Zakkai in Yom HaTshiei, right, that takana about, right, relating to when Chadash becomes Mutter, that really was a Deoraisa position, but because he was the first one to institute it, so it's called a takana. So here too, Ozu, I think maybe it should be Afzu. I think possibly the text should be Afzu, Adarsh Vitkin. So here too, Ezra was Doresh Psukim. He interpreted Psukim and he made this Takana Balkari, right? And he derives it from this juxtaposition of Hodatam Levanecha and right to Yom Asher Amadta. Whereas, the Gemara, at the end of our sugya, the Gemara says, so how can Rabbi Yehuda disagree with the standard of Shub and Levi? It can't be because he doesn't think juxtapositions are legitimate midasha Torah and Dreshet pen, or a legitimate mode of biblical interpretation, because we know that Rabbi Yehuda agrees that in Sefer Devarim it is appropriate. And the answer is he has a different drasha, which is that anybody who teaches their son, or in other versions, their grandson Torah, it's as if God treats them as if they received it that day from Chorit. So the Miri says, right, that what's going on here is not that the conversation is not Drabanan, the conversation is Deoraisa, and what Rabbi Huda is saying is not that he's adopting a prior position. We can talk about the dates of all these drushas. Rabbi Huda is earlier than these drushas, so we're just reconstructing his position. Miri says that Rabbi Huda chose to interpret the juxtaposition in a way different than Ezra did. So this is a really, really radical claim. And it doesn't seem, I don't think that he's going to go so far as to claim that Ezra was wrong. And in fact, we see the next line. He says, "V'chayotze b'zeh rishain levatel." And in situations like this, you're allowed to to annul the prior ruling. I mean, Rabbi Huda is allowed to annul the drasha made by Ezra and upheld by all the generations between Ezra and Rabbi Huda, Shalom Misaran HaKatuv El LaChachamim Shebechol Dor V'Dor, because the Torah gives its authority over to the sages that exist in every generation. Okay, so I think that the Meiri's position is exactly what I was looking for in the Rambam, that it's not that Rabbi Huda rejected the prior position. As such, he thought it was not appropriate for his generation, so he came up with an alternative interpretation, and he was allowed to prefer that interpretation in his time to the prior one, because because every generation has the authority to reinterpret the Torah without claiming that the authority was misused by a prior generation, that it was an error. Right, Miri goes on to say that he said something similar about like to this in Avodah Zarah, about how you can under takanos, but really it's not similar on the deraisa level at all. And then he says, because Rabbi Huda did not want to uproot the Xera entirely, so originally they went to, instead of requiring immersion, to allowing water to be poured over you, right, 9 kavin on your goof, but eventually they're mevatel even that, and they come up with a big principle, which is ein divrei Torah mekablin tuma, and therefore no matter how tame you are, and a balkarius becomes Tameh, you're still allowed to learn Torah. And he says, and this will just make this topical for us, and it's the remnant of this Gzera that was Nisbatil by Rabbi Huda The remnant of the Gzera is what creates the minhag to be tovil erev Rosh Hashanah v'Yom Kippur. Shemi mei slicha utfila yisera. Right, and not only that, right, there are days of extra thing that sometimes people save themselves from sin by doing this, and he has a whole series of narratives as to how the existence of this Gzera can still save you from sin. So it turns out that our minhag, or those who have the minhag of being tovil, erev Rosh Hashanah, erev Yom Kippur, right, that minhag for the Meiri is a remnant of the Gzera that was overturned by Rabbi Yehuda. And the reason it was overturned by Rabbi Yehuda is because it was leading to Bitul Torah, which was psychologically unhealthy, possibly religiously unhealthy as well. And because it was based in Psukim as opposed to a policy judgment call, therefore Rabbi Yehuda was allowed to do it, even though he did not in any way claim to be as great in Chachma and Minyan as Ezra. But the Torah is intended to be interpreted in every generation according to the needs of the generation, according to the Beit Din or the Beit Din HaGadol of that generation. Shana Tova.